I'd like to say at this time that the Episcopal Diocese has been tremendous help to the Pittsburgh Pastoral Institute. First of all, because Dr. John Bays, who is the rector of Calvary, has been in on this since its inception, helped to start it with Dr. Gross. They have, for many years, they permitted us to meet in the Calvary Church, in the parish house, free of charge. And now, the Institute has a house on Marchand Street, which is just around the corner from Calvary. I think that the diocese made it possible for the Institute to buy the building and to remodel it, although the Pittsburgh Foundation gave the money for that also. I presume that eventually the Institute will pay the diocese back as much as they can, but they are always helpful in giving them money for whatever they may need. Of course, the Catholic diocese has also been very helpful, but then many of their priests have received a great deal from the Institute.
They're not connected with the Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. I mean, it's a
separate thing. They have meetings there occasionally. I don't know of any affiliation with the seminary, but occasionally they have a joint meeting or something like that. This is an organization which is quite independent of all others, and I think they want to remain that way because they want to remain strictly non-sectarian.
Dorothy, where are there other Jewish laymen on the board?
Well, there are now. In the past 2 or 3 years, at least 3 or 4 have been put on the board. Milton Sussman is on the board. Yes, there are some others now. They have quite a varied board as far as ethnic groups are concerned, and that makes it interesting, too.
Are there black people on the
board?
Yeah,
not on the board. I think they did have a black person. I'm not sure, but I think he resigned only because he didn't have the time. But there are blacks in the counseling staff. The one foundation, I'm trying to remember, I think it's the Hillman Foundation, is set up primarily for the counseling and education of black ministers. And I think this coming October, when we have our annual meeting, I believe that the bishop, and I can't remember his name now, the bishop of the Baptist churches here is going to be the main speaker. Oh yes, there's a direct affiliation with all the ethnic groups. And that really is so much better because they're trying to reach the whole community. And this is a long, hard pull because very few people know about the Institute. Originally, I had hoped that they would really use a public relations person and get this across. But they couldn't do it because once, you see, every time there's an article in the paper, there is a response. And they haven't the people or enough money to be able to take care of all the people who would like to participate in this. This is really too bad. But eventually, I hope they'll get more money.
Well, actually, if they reach the clergy, and the clergy becomes prepared to deal with the kind of social and psychological problems they're asked to deal with, that is their main function.
Yeah.
And you don't need public relations on a big scale to reach their own clergy.
No, not for that, but for many other things that they do.
Mm-hmm.
They need it, but they can't go into too much of it, of public relations. Maybe someday they'll be able to. That's really about the primary function of the Institute, and as far as my part in it is concerned, I go to the meetings and I try to be of whatever little help I can be in a very small way, because most of it is done through the clergy itself and the psychiatrists and the counselors. The lay people on the board are the ones who either accept a policy or reject it, like all boards, lay where there are lay people. They set up standards, but they can't set up standards for the kind of professional people that we have.
Dorothy, let's talk now about one of your biggest contributions to council, and that's Annethan House and the Senior Citizen Program. Tell us about that from the beginning.
Well, you want to go way back to the old council lounge?
Absolutely, as far back as you go back.
That's how far back I go back. Well, now let me see. We will be in Annethan House 11 years in September. We went in there. Yes, 11 years in September, and we were in the old council lounge for 15 years. So there you have it, it's 26 years. Now the council lounge, and I'm sure, Frieda, you know this just as well as I do, but I'll put it on the
tape. We're recording for posterity.
Yeah. The council lounge was started in June, I think. I'm trying to remember the date. Let's go back 26 years. 1948. Right, quick, see? At the time that the board talked about this, maybe a year or so prior to its development and its final initiation, Mrs. Annethan had been in New York and had seen a Golden Age project in operation. I think this was the first one in the country.
And wasn't it National Council of Jewish
Women? I don't know if it was the New York section or National.
I'm under the impression it was the Council of Jewish Women.
Oh, it was definitely Council of Jewish
Women. They really pioneered this nation.
But whether it was the New York section or whether it was the National, I am inclined to believe it was the New York section.
Yes.
Because I don't think the National.
No, they don't have their own primary. I really didn't mean that. Yeah. I meant National Council of Jewish Women.
Well, she was very impressed. And she came back and told us, a few of us, about it, and said that she would give us $5,000 to start this project. In those days, $5,000 could start a project. So we started looking around for a place, and we found a place on Forbes Avenue in the block between Murray and Shady in a loft. Which was owned by the Little family at that time. I think Louis Little.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Shoe Little.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided we would go ahead with it, at which time we ran into a number of snags. Dr. Taylor, who was then the executive director of the Federation, what they called it then, the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies, felt that this should not be a project of the Council of Jewish Women. It was too good for us, and I'm saying this advisedly. It should be done by the Irene Kaufman Center. Did you ever know that?
No, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I knew they fought the idea. I thought they felt it wasn't even a good idea.
Oh, no. They thought the idea was all right. But that if we were going to do, I mean, it would take a lot of hard work, and they didn't think we'd ever get any people to come up there. But the idea itself was all right. But if we were going to do it, it should be done under the auspices of the Federation through the Irene Kaufman Center. So he got Mr. Lindenberg in on that. Mr. Lindenberg at that time, you see, they were already contemplating the Squirrel Hill branch of the Irene of the Ikes at that time. They were contemplating it. It wasn't there. It wasn't there until a couple of years before we moved into Annethan.
Right.
But apparently, they had something in their minds. Now, whether they really felt that the Ikes should do it or whether they really felt that the Federation should do it, I'm really not too sure. I know the Ikes came in later. I may be confused on that.
Yes, I think that that's what's happening there.
Yeah.
The way I remember the story is they weren't ready even for the idea. They thought nobody would come.
Well, they said that the day before we opened, but Dr. Taylor created a lot of trouble for us there. And the day before we opened, he came with some other people, and I don't remember who they were now. And we were all set up, and he said, "You ladies are making a tremendous mistake. You won't have 8 people here when the door is open." This I remember vividly.
Yeah, that's the way it was told.
Well,
me.
Maybe I'm confusing the Ikes with the second.
Later,
episode.
When the Ikes came up, it was
yes,
the second.
Yes, that's
episode.
Possible. Anyway, we did open, and instead of having 8, we had 200 and something over 200 people there the first day, and they came from as far as the North Side, from East Pittsburgh, they came from all over. And it was, of course, very exciting. Now, that lasted for 15 years, and it never diminished. The interest was always there. Some of the charter members, of course, passed away. There are a couple of them who are still with us at Anathan House. I don't know if you know that, but there are. Mr. Lebowitz is one.
Oh, my. How old is he
92
now?
92 or 3, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
and he's a wonderful gentleman. Anyway, the program developed there. It was at that time primarily a recreational program. We did have sewing, cancer dressing.
From the very beginning.
From the very beginning. But most of it was recreational. Dancing, reading, parties, all sorts of things that would be, that really the people wanted at that time.
Did you have the card playing then from the beginning and the bingo?
Yes, there was card playing, there was bingo. It was primarily recreation.
Now, who created the program itself? Was that a council committee?
You mean for the original council?
Yes.
And yes, that was a council committee. I can't remember, and I've been racking my brains to think of the first director, and I can't remember her name. I know that
she was hired from the beginning. That was a paid job.
Yes, she retired. Then Ethel's sister, Ruth, came in, and she was a good director. And then, of course, Ethel Summerman, and she was there for, I guess, about 12 of the 15 years. She was an excellent director. She related beautifully to the people. They loved her. Anything she did was perfectly all right with them. The committee, there was always a council committee of the council lands. And the committee regulated, as most committees, as I've said before, the policies of the what was done there, or instituted new ideas, or came up there just to be with the folks, and many of us did that. And on the days when they'd have their anniversary, that was a big, big do, which was always in June, and the committee always attended, and of course they had refreshments, and they always had refreshments. That's not new to Anathan House. They always had cookies and tea, or something like that. And they always had their birthday parties. From the very start.
Did that idea come from New York, or was that?
Oh, I really don't know if any of this came from New York.
Once the idea of just having a place for senior citizens.
Once the idea germinated, and there we had it, one idea grows into another idea. But it was a beautiful place, and the atmosphere, I don't mean the place itself was beautiful, it was a loft. Many people contributed different things so that it would be at least habitable for daytime use. And for a while there, we were open one night a week. I don't remember what night it was. It was a Thursday night, but couldn't keep that up. First of all, it was too expensive.
Dorothy, did you have 250? How much was the daily attendance?
Oh, I suppose maybe around maybe 80, 90.
That's
something.
A tremendous attendance at the old place, because when I came in,
it was a big loft.
It was 80 daily attendance for a long time in the
Oh, yes. Well, there's people just moved over.
Mm-hmm.
Took us a long time to bring other people into Annapurna.
Now, from the beginning, were there, what was the ratio?
I don't know, maybe 80 to 90 is big. I'm taking an average. Maybe
right,
it's
I understand.
An average of 70. I can't
No,
recall.
My comment is that it was as big there as it was
at the beginning, yes.
Mm-hmm. What was the ratio of men and women?
Oh, I don't remember that.
From the beginning?
From the beginning, we had many, many men. And it really wasn't until the Ike started in Squirrel Hill that we lost many of the men. And then the ratio was more women to men.
And, of course, now that it's merged, it's
oh,
back
well,
up.
Oh, now it's back again.
Dorothy, from the beginning, was there a dues that the members paid?
No. No, they paid nothing. Everything was free.
Now, did they take part in the refreshments, or, I mean, did they...
Did they serve the refreshments?
No, did they take part in even paying for
no.
that?
No.
Nothing?
They didn't pay for anything.
Mm-hmm. Did they help serve?
Yes, I think they helped serve. Although many of the council women served. They were on the hospitality committee.
How big an active council committee group did you have
oh,
at that time?
Oh, it was a big committee.
15, 20?
Oh, I would say it was better than 20. That was a big committee and an active committee.
And when did you start the music programs and some of the lecturing?
Well, Belle Rubenstein was in there right from the beginning. With the music appreciation, we had a
so the
a
educational
high
part of it.
There. Well, that part, yes. But as far as classes classes such as you have and other people and Mary Markowitz and social studies and political thing, we didn't have any of that.
Mm-hmm. But how about handcraft classes? Did you have that on
the? Sewing we had. I don't think we had. If we had ceramics, I don't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I don't know where we would have been able or how we would have been able to have ceramics up there.
Mm-hmm.
There was really no place for it.
How direct a role did Bessie Annapurna play from the beginning?
You mean in the old council
mm-hmm.
lounge? She used to go up occasionally to see the folks, that's all.
But she didn't take, she wasn't an active committee member in determining programs.
She was on the committee. She must have been on the committee. But she really never determined too much
mm-hmm.
of the program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you were the chairman.
I think she felt that if something was not to her liking, then she would express herself. But otherwise, not too much.
Were you the original chairman?
No. In fact, I was never the chairman there in council, in the old council lounge. I was on the committee, but I never was the chairman. Trying to remember, was Minnie Sussman the president at that time?
Well, I can't remember. We could look up the chairman in the old council.
The last chairman there was, of course, was Selma Sapira. That's just before we moved over to Annapurna House. That wonderful lady that moved to Florida, Edelstein.
Oh, yes.
Rose Edelstein was a very active chairman.
Hmm.
You know, you're asking me names that they've really, I have to pull them out of my head.
You're doing very
I'm
well.
I'm not so good on the names. But they had very good chairman. Tell you who else was a chairman once. Patsy, what's her name? Not Rosenthal. I can still see her. Well, she doesn't live here anymore. It'll come to me eventually, but that's not important.
All right. Now, at what point, Mrs. Annapurna gave the $5,000 to start the project. At what point did it become a regular part of the council budget?
Right from the beginning.
Right from the beginning. It was budgeted from council,
with
the money that Mrs. Annapurna gave.
Well, no. The $5,000 established the project.
Oh. then
and paid probably for the first few months as to rent and light and telephone.
Uh-huh.
And but it took money to get that loft in condition.
And the ongoing salary of the director.
I was going to say, we had to pay the director. So that lasted a very short time. But it started it. Without that $5,000, we would have been hard put to have been able to start it.
But Council incorporated it then from the beginning.
Immediately.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Was all in the budget, and they were always very generous. I can't recall what the budget was. I'm sure it was.
Well, when I came in, it was $25,000 a year, and it has remained around that.
Yeah, area. Well, of course, that was in the days that was Anniston House.
Right.
But it was much less over at the Council Lounge because the section wasn't in there.
Tell me, Dorothy, what was the thinking and what enabled you to get Anniston House and move it over?
Well, the thinking, of course, was that gradually our folks were getting older and older. We were not getting as many of the 60 and 65-year-olds as we really wanted to, because they knew that then they would get older, and the steps were a terrific deterrent. There was a big flight of steps they had to climb in order to get to the Council Lounge, plus the fact that it was not big enough. I mean, it was big enough as far as the number of people whom we accommodated, but it was not big enough in the kind of work we wanted to do there. The whole concept of what to do for older adults had changed drastically in those 10 years. Originally, it was a place for them to go where they could be happy and be entertained and enjoy themselves. Well, that had changed completely. In every city, it wasn't just in Pittsburgh, that the older adults could be valuable assets to the community, that they still had the ability to learn, that they still had the ability to create, and all of those things we had become aware of through the years. And that loft was no place to do this. So we began looking for a place. And it took us a long time. We looked for a place for quite a while before Anniston House became a reality. And then, after we'd looked around, and I must say that Mrs. Anniston always went to look at the places, because she had indicated that in memory of her husband, she would buy a house for the section. So naturally, she went to look at all the places. Well, the only place that she would ever consider, after looking at many, was 1620 Murray Avenue, and she was right.
It was an ideal choice.
Yes, the other places would never have lent themselves to this project, and certainly would never have been able to house the section, the Pittsburgh section. So, found this place, and through Rose Edelstein's husband, who knew something about real estate and knew real estate people, and through Meyer Sachs, whom I knew, we were able to make contact with Rabbi Leiter. Incidentally, he just died he had been given that house. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't.
50 members of his congregation, or whatever you called it, the place was called the Maimonides Institute, had bought this house, not 50, I don't know what the number were, there weren't 50, had bought this house for him and given it to him, for him to house his institute. So they contacted him, and he was very ungracious about the whole thing, but said that he would permit Mrs. Anniston and the architect and the real estate man and me to go in. So we made the date and we went in. Well, I think most people know the story of of 1620 Murray Avenue when we went in there. I think the whole community knows the story of the zoning that went on, or the trouble that we had with the zoning. But first, I'll stick to the house itself. It was in the most deplorable condition that I think it would be possible for a building to be in and still stand. No one could ever imagine what that house looked like. Rabbi Leiter did his work in one room that housed something like 40,000 volumes and pieces of literature. There was newspaper and pamphlets and everything all over his study. And when Bessie Anathan and I were in there with the men, and we were talking to them, all of a sudden I heard rustling in the papers, and I said to Bessie, come on, let's get out of here. This place is full of rats. And it was.
Did he work there alone, or was
there
a group?
There every
was
day.
It a group?
He didn't live there. Now, I'll tell you, he had the one room, which is now our red room, mm-hmm. was his sanctuary, mm-hmm. where he had a pulpit of sorts and a few benches.
And
Torah, people came there to worship.
Mm-hmm.
And every day, you know how, I'm sure you know, they go there early in the morning and they go there in the evening, and they came and they worshiped. We went down in the basement. He had a couple living there that I can't even begin, I wouldn't want to describe it to you. The stench was so terrible that it was unbelievable. So we got out of there as quickly as we could, having looked through enough and having gotten Harry Lefkowitz's okay that the building itself was still a good building. The walls in that building, I think, are 15 to 18 inches thick. Harry could tell right away it was a wonderful building.
Was the second floor in use when he had it?
No.
In the third floor?
Oh, I don't know. We
Do
didn't
you know that Dorothy back
Harry Lefkowitz went up there.
Back in about the late 1930s, I went to a modern dance class conducted by Genevieve Jones on
That's
the third
right.
floor.
That's right. Sure. Originally...
That was before Rabbi Leiter had it.
Oh, yeah. Originally. Was a school.
Colonial school.
That's right.
Was it actively a school?
Absolutely.
It was a school before Genevieve Jones.
Well, that's what I mean. Before. Well, did she buy the whole building?
Yeah. That's right. And then Genevieve Jones bought it, and then Rabbi Leiter got it.
I see.
Originally, it was a residence, but we don't mm-hmm. know whose residence. Mm-hmm. We don't seem to be able to find that out. There must be a title somewhere.
In the deed, sure. It would be in the deed.
But anyway, Harry and the real estate people knew that it was a good building. Much could be done with it, and the property itself was very valuable.
An ideal location.
Yeah. So, Mrs. Anathan made an offer to Rabbi Leiter. I think she made an offer of $50,000, which, of course, to him was a lot of money, because he looked as poor as a church mouse. Well, he having seen that Mrs. Anathan was there, see, that was the original asking price, raised it to $60,000, which he said she would pay, and that she would give us another $60,000 for the remodeling of the house. So then we had to get a permit to start work and get him out of there. So naturally, we had to get a zoning permit, and that's when the real trouble started.
And didn't he need a zoning permit to conduct
no,
his institute?
No. This was the thing that was completely unbelievable to any of us. The neighbors there permitted him to stay there. The neighbors on Murray, the neighbors on Aylesbury. They saw these people walking in and out of there every day. They must have realized the place was filthy, and they never objected.
Because I'll bet of the religious you know, you can't zone against a religious institution.
Oh, yes, you can.
Can you?
I thought that you could. You can do something if it's, if you can report it to the Board of Health.
Well,
well, anyway, once we applied for a zoning permit, then the neighbors. And unfortunately, the group headed, and I'm not going to say by whom because I don't want it in this thing, and there's no point. It's water over the dam. I still don't talk to the gentleman. It's been a long time. Someone whom I'm sure Ellie knows quite well. In fact, you may know who it is. Living on Aylesborough Avenue, I guess, the Christian neighbors got to him.
Oh, this man was Jewish.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And he got another one of the Jewish men who lived there to go along with him. And he was the spokesman for Dave Craig, for Nick Unkovic, for all of these people. They didn't need a spokesman. If they had wanted to speak, they could speak themselves.
Did Dave Craig live there, too?
He did. Yes, anymore.
On Aylesborough.
Mm-hmm. So we had our first zoning meeting, and they came, and they had an attorney from Reed Smith Shaw McRae, who was a nincompoop if ever I saw one. And we had Alan Berkman, who is no slouch. And they brought up the most fantastic tales you have ever heard in your life. In fact, the Jewish spokesman brought up some things that were such lies that subsequently, I have to tell, no, I won't, no, forget it. I'm not even going to bring it in because I don't want it in here. Well, the case was
postponed. Was the main issue that there were too many people coming?
The main issue was there was no place for parking. This was the main issue that they brought out. This wasn't the main issue. The main issue was that it was going to be called the Council of Jewish Women. That was the main issue. The Maimonides Institute, of course, didn't mean anything. But the National Council of Jewish Women meant a great deal. So, but they brought out that they felt there'd be no place for parking. And when we said, there won't be parking by our older citizens. Of course, at that time, it was to be primarily and only a place for senior citizens.
Not for council.
Not for the Council of Jewish Women. We told them that they never drive. None of them could drive, and none of them had cars to drive. And that if they were brought there, the cars left immediately. And if there were any people on the committee from the council, they would park around wherever they could, which we still do. Well, that zoning, to make a long story short, that business took 2 years. We went to one zoning meeting after the other. It was appealed by them from one court to another.
You had the house on auction.
We won it each time, and each time they appealed. And finally, it got to the point where they said they were going to take it to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And we said, go ahead.
So, was Alan Berkman donating his services all this time?
Well, practically. We paid
except for him. Legal expenses, I
we
guess.
Paid him, but not too much. So, he said, tell them to go ahead, appeal it to the Supreme Court. I'll file my brief and they can file their brief. Well, he knew they were going to lose. So before it ever got there, they made a deal, not with my consent. I don't know where I was at the time. At that time, how I ever did what I did, I don't know, because I had plenty of trouble. But anyway, I was not there when they made this deal, that they would allow us to go ahead with the project in the building, provided that the council reimbursed them for $1,000 worth of legal briefs that they were going to present at the Supreme Court, and the council paid it. Real blackmail. So that's how we got the house. And I don't mind putting it in there for posterity.
No, it should be there, because no one will know it, Dorothy, if it's not there. You and Bessie Anathan are probably the two.
Well, Bessie, I'm sure, has forgotten a great deal of this. So we then went ahead with the house. It took from January until the following September to remodel a house, which was not too long considering what was done there, because it had all new wiring, all new plumbing, all new plaster, an elevator which took months and months and months to get in, because that building is built on blue rock, and every time they would bore through that rock, they would break the drill, and the Pittsburgh Elevator Company had to send to Minneapolis for a new drill. Oh, it really was something. That, I was there every single day, including Sundays, with Harry Leftwich. So you know, that house means something. It doesn't mean anything to the young people at Council.
Oh, Dorothy.
No, it really doesn't.
Well, it does to me. And I
It does to
part,
you.
But I wasn't part of the building. I've just always regarded it as such a beautiful place.
Yeah, but the young people, they couldn't begin to have the feeling that those of us who worked on it, like Sarah Lefkowitz, Florence Goldsmith when she was alive, I mean, we had a feeling for that building. It wasn't really a building. It was something living. And Harry, that's the way he felt. And Alan Berkman. Alan Berkman told me last week at a party that every time he goes past that house, tears come to his eyes, and he has such a feeling for it he can't even explain it.
Isn't that wonderful?
Now, that's what that house means. Mm-hmm. It's not just a house. It's bricks and mortar, of course. Mm-hmm. It's what it has done, what it stands for. Well, anyway. So, in September of, where are we? 63. We dedicated the house. Now, you were at the dedication, I think.
No, I didn't come in until around 64 at the council.
Well, we had quite a dedication. Place was jammed. Dr. Freehoff spoke, and all the dignitaries in the city were there. And we had a bang-up dedication.
Now, it was still the only senior citizen center in the city, wasn't it?
Well, there were little things, like the Golden Age Club at the Irene Kaufman Center. The council used to participate in their Golden Age mm-hmm. Club. We did it together. They used to meet once a week.
Mm-hmm.
At
but
the old center,
the
not at Squirrel
yeah.
Hill.
Mm-hmm.
No.
You mean down at downtown,
uh-huh.
on the hill. But elsewhere in the city, there were not yet any
Not
seniors
that I know of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
None of these.
I knew it was the only one for many, many
yeah,
years.
Yeah, none of these municipal
mm-hmm.
organizations were started then. Mm-hmm. Nothing else that I know of. And nothing day by day. You know, they might have had it one day a week,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but nothing else. Incidentally, I don't see much point in going into what went on with the Ikes at that time. That's all
well,
water
some
over
of
the
thinking,
dam.
Maybe you should put this in. At the time that you needed new quarters, council was invited by the
yes,
newly built
true.
Irene Kaufman Center
well,
to establish their lounge
well,
there.
But yes.
Talk about that.
Yeah, they were, when they were building that building and we were still in the old lounge, they invited council to move the lounge down to the new Irene Kaufman Center building. All right. They said they would provide us with one room. So a few of us went down there and looked at the room. And the room wasn't half as big as what we had on Forbes Street.
And it was also on the second floor, wasn't
it? No,
oh,
no. The original room that they showed us was on the first floor. But we couldn't use it. It was just impossible. And I think, oh, maybe you're right. No, I seem to remember it was on the first floor, but it's possible it was on the second floor, and then they would have had steps to get
there. Yeah, that was my understanding.
That's possible, but it seemed to me I looked at one on the first floor, too. Well, we wrote them a very nice letter and thanked them for the invitation and told them that their quarters were not large enough. At that time, Julian Ruslander had a meeting at his home, and a few of us went.
Was he then president of the
Y? No, it wasn't the YIKC. I guess he must have been president of the Ikes. He had a meeting at which time their representatives were present, and they said verbally, Julian, well, I don't know if I want his name in here. I don't know. Anyway, the statement was made that they would not establish a senior citizens group in the new Irene Kaufman Center building.
In order not to compete with our
group. In order not
to
compete, which of course they did. Now, the reason that they gave for their doing it was that it was a community program for all ages, and they could not make an exception of those from 60 up.
And they did consider it one of the clubs, didn't they?
Well, the club was considered a club, but not the whole project.
Right.
The Senior Citizens Club, of course, was the thing that always created the difficulty. And we still have a club, but it's gradually getting smaller and smaller.
I saw Mr. Snyder
at
my dialogue group, and he was so enthusiastic about the new program. I did have to laugh because he was one of the men who fought the merger.
Well, he not only fought the merger, he fought the Council of Jewish Women to such an extent that it was unbelievable. So a lot has come out of it, and of course our program today is vastly different from the original program. Tremendous number of classes, educational and recreational, all kinds of workshops.